Accession number 10967, reel 3.
Colonel Maxted, reel 3.
Yeah.
You were saying that...
Oh, he said, yes, I was coming back one day and reading my Times, which is just came out from home, and I found that I was sitting there, and I suddenly found I was going down the wrong track. And he spoke just as if he was on a train coming and gone to the wrong station out somewhere in suburbia. And I realised, of course, he'd been sitting on top of an elephant, and the elephant had taken the wrong track and just led him down there. But, he impressed me an awful lot in that one. He impressed us all, I think, too.
So you were pushing down the Khabur Valley against no opposition. How soon was it that you came into contact with the Japanese?
Well, we were pushing down the town, and we got as far as Witoke. The people out on the east, I think that was the 9th, 14th, had gone off into another brigade by this time. My own battalion, they came up against the Japanese, who were building a bunker or an outpost or things up in the hills, but this side was on the west side of Morlaike, and that's where we got stuck. We couldn't move them, and they didn't seem to want to move us. I remember they wanted to bomb them, and because I was intelligence officer at the time, I was sent back to go with the Americans to bomb this place. They were going to drop landmines so as to clear away the things, so clear away all the undergrowth, so you could see this. And I went back to the other side of Delhi, flew across this area with the bombers, and they said, "Is that the slot?" I said, "Yes," and they let everything go. It wasn't, I don't think, a great success. All it did was to clear the field of fire for the Japanese, who were sitting in their bunkers, and suddenly all the jungles moved away and they could see. But that's how it's poised. At the time the Japanese made their advance with the intention of going towards Kohima, as we now know, the brigade headquarters was in the jungle south of Tamu, and ahead of us, ahead of the brigade, in south of the brigade headquarters, there were two battalions, the fourth 10th Gurkhas and the Border Regiment, who were just off the track a little bit. There was a Jungle Field Regiment, which had become become a jungle field, having been an anti-aircraft, light anti-aircraft, straight on the track in front of us. And there were the gunners, a gunner Royal Artillery Regiment battery, just to the right. I should think they were about 8 miles in front of Brigade HQ. So that's how everyone was poised. And the idea was, of course, we'd just gently go work on and send out patrols if necessary.
What happened next?
Well, I think it became known further back that the Japanese were making an advance. I mean, Slim and his headquarters knew that the Japanese were coming up towards India. And so we were told when we were in that position that we would have to pull back from there towards Imphal, all this lot. On the receipt of a code word, we'd have to come back. And the brigade commander, Jimmy James, sent me in the morning round to see these ships. I went down with three carriers and we saw the jungle field who were in the road, and they'd had a Japanese column come up the road the previous day led by a motorcycle combination. So the Japanese obviously didn't expect trouble. And these chaps had let fly. And the motorcycle combination was standing out there about 200 yards in front of them. And nothing else in sight. And actually I went out and tried to start it up and bring it in. And then the carrier came out and towed us both in. When this carrier, this valve combination, had maps in it of their attack on Imphal. It was there. So we wished that bet they called us. I know at the time the jungle field were not really enjoying life very much. I don't think their commander was really. Well, for one thing, he'd been stuck out as the most foremost unit, which wasn't really designed for jungle fighting. I mean, it was a jungle field, mortars, but it was a support unit. And they'd had this sudden attack, so when I went up there in the morning, they were all sitting, saying, oh, we mustn't touch the motorcycle, it's probably a booby trap, they'll shoot you if you go out there, you see, they've got it under fire. I remember trotting out in the morning and saying, hopefully, and it was a nice sunny day, and I walked about 200 yards at a fast pace, and then I got on this motorcycle. I sat there, and I could feel bullets hitting my back, you know, and I sat there trying to start the damn thing, and it wouldn't start. And I was collided, as I said, with three carriers, and the carrier command, having seen I wasn't being shot at, came whistling out and tied a rope round, and we led the thing in. That's how we got it. So we put it onto the carrier then and got it back fairly quickly, and I saw all the units. I think that was the unit that would have worried anyone. Perhaps I didn't worry him at the time, but I think he would have been worried, because that evening the brigade commander again sent me down to come back, and this time to tell them what to do when the balloon went up. There was going to be a code word. I forget what it was now. And he sent me back with three tanks, carbineers, who were with us, heavy tanks. And his plan was that the Gurkhas and the border should come onto the main road, and then work back, leaving companies so that they could form strong points all along the main road. And then the jungle field would pass right through them, and the gunners would pass right through them, and then these chaps could leapfrog back along the road. But part of his plan was that the jungle field had to stay put until the Gurkhas and the border regiment had got into position on the road behind them. And Godfrey Proctor, who was then commanding the Gurkha regiment, and was going to coordinate all this on the ground. And I told them all this was going to happen, the gunners, the jungle field, and then I went across and told Godley, who was the commander of the borders, and Proctor, who was the commander of the Gurkhas, and they who were going around together about this with the tanks. And by that time it was getting dark, and the tank commander said, no, we can't go back through the jungle now, it's too dangerous, so we'll stay here for the night. So I stayed there the night, sleeping as best I could under the tank, and we heard the Japanese heavy vehicles going round between us and the river, which was on the east side, on our east side. They were bypassing us. They'd obviously found out, but as a result of the previous night, that we were a block there, they were trying to bypass us to get behind us, as we thought. But I suppose, really, they were on their way to Kohima and didn't want to have any interference at that time. That's only a subsequent. And I know they were sufficiently near, because the gunners were firing at them in some way that gunners have. And some of their shots were going into the trees above us, and we got some casualties ourselves in the unit. And then the next morning, we were going back to the gunners, and we thought that someone thought it really was a purpose, I suppose. It would be a good idea just to make an excursion to see whether we could find anything out to the patrol with the tanks. So a company of Gurkhas and their officers was on the ground round the tanks to protect the tanks, and the tanks were there to give firepower to the unit if necessary. We were at three, and the tank was commanded by a chap called Pettit, and I was in the tank with him, but standing just over the gun hatch. The commander is on top of the tank, and the gunner is to his right hand side, and I was able to stand in front of the gunner inside the guardrail for his gun where it would recoil. There was a rail round which was inside which the gun worked. I just got my foot inside this thing, my leg inside this rail, and the idea was if we did run into any trouble, I could listen to what he wanted to say, the thing, and to liaise with the chaps on the ground. That was the thing between the three of us. And we went out. We didn't see anything. There was this Japanese lieutenant. I thought he was there. He was going to relieve himself or something. So we must have been very near. But we bumped into him, and the Kirker shot him. And then after a bit, we said, well, there's nothing else to do. So we turned round and came back. It was a bit abortive altogether. And as we came back, the tank suddenly slewed round to go off the track into the thing, and its gun hit a tree, the front of the gun, and pushed it back on its recoil system. So it came back onto my leg, which was inside between the gun and the rail, and of course it crushed it. But as soon as Pettit, who was the commander of the tank, saw this, of course he backed it off. I know he leapt down and came to me. I was all right. Fortunately, it squashed it very much. And I said, "My God, John, has it got your balls?" And it was one of the nastiest moments in the war. I was quite sure whether it had or not. But I was all right. But it was a big crush. But anyway, everyone knew their story by that time, because I'd done it the previous night. And I think they got me back by ambulance. Someone gave me some morphia or something like that. I came back to the headquarters. Then I went back to Tamu. The brigadier sent me straight back to the sort of hospital, which was in Tamu. But I didn't feel it. I didn't feel at all bad. So I next day I got up and I went back to headquarters in time to see some of the units coming back, because the signal had been given. Commander said, "No, you get out of it." So I was sent back to India. I went back to Imphal. Went back to a hospital in the centre of India. They wanted to take me home. But I said I didn't want to go home, because I'd been with this crowd for a little while, and it was just, as far as I was concerned, a young man, it's getting a bit of fun. So I took a voluntary discharge. I think that's probably the first time anyone's done that in India for a long time. And I came back. By that time, Kohima had been closed, so you couldn't get back by road. So I went to an aerodrome and found an American plane that was going to go in with a lot of bombs, and so they checked up, and they sat me on top of a lot of mortar bombs, I remember, in this old Dakota, and flew me in. I got back to the unit that way.
Can we put any dates on these? Do you know the dates that you had the accident to your leg? Or the month?
And it's difficult, isn't it? It's December 43 to June 44. I was in Burma, and this must have been, well, it was the beginning of the attack on Kohima, so it could be dated fairly easily. But I should think it was about May, because I did all this business of coming back and being with them. And certainly it was the day that they the command, the order had been given, withdrawing the 20th Division from Burma, because that went wrong, as I subsequently found out from both Godfrey Proctor, who I met later, and he was my G1, he was predecessor as G1 at Delhi, and the brigade commander too, Jimmy James. It seems that when they got the code word to withdraw, the jungle field up sticked straight away and went down the road. They didn't wait for anyone to cross over or be coordinated or anything else. I think they were probably fed up with being where they were, which was a bit exposed, and they went back down the road, and the gunners went back after them. So when the border and the Gurkhas were thinking of coming across to do their stuff of forming troops along, of course there was no one for them to do this for, and they probably made a mistake, because instead of coming onto the road, which wasn't very far away from them, it's quarter mile, half mile, they went straight back through the jungle, come back on the road further back, and they ran into the Japanese column, and there was obviously a confused amount of fighting then, and the borders suffered casualties, and they came back in a bit of a shambles, I think. It could have been a perfectly natural, normal way of doing it, you know, had they followed out the plan.
What's this term jungle field that you used?
What is it?
Yes.
It's a unit that is armed with, which is armed with 3-inch mortars, big mortars, and had been a light ACAC regiment. In other words, he'd given up its role as light ACAC because there's nothing much to shoot at, and been armed with mortars and was there as a support, just like the gunners' artillery, except it'd be closer up to the troops, and I think the idea was it could get nearer to the front line, of course, and be more useful in the jungle.
So when you got back to Imphal,
yes,
what was the situation then?
The situation was that the units had come back. The brigade head was about on the edge of the Imphal plain at Shenan, there, dug in, and the units were all round it.
And when was this?
We're still in May, I think, on this one.
So you hadn't been away very long?
Oh, no, I should think 10 days probably. It started off, I should think, a bit earlier than May. It was in the middle of April. Because then I got back and was there all the time until the road was opened to Kohima. They came back, they got it opened. But at that time the Japanese were coming, sweeping around, of course, and trying to cut off Imphal by their attack on Kohima.
What were your own duties on going back?
I was still, I'd intelligence officer, but I'd become, for a short time, I became staff captain. I don't know why I did that. I was only there for a very short time. It was known that I was going to the staff college and going on that 20th course, because the brigadier had recommended me for that. So I think I just stood in for the staff captain.
How close did you come to the fighting at Imphal?
You could see it happening on when we were at Shenam, on the hills away to the just not very far away, and then we went on the then we were pulled out of that on Shenam, and sent up another road. And Shenam was south east of Imphal, And we went on, we were sent up another lateral road, which went northeast from Imphal. And it was really in between Kohima, which was further around north still, and where we'd been. In other words, if you think of Northeast, straight up north, we'd been southeast. Now we were northeast on this one. And there there was a brigade headquarters, and next door to it was an engineering unit, and the Japanese attacked that unit during the night and overran it. So it was right next door to Brigade. I know I had a lovely pair of black pajamas, which I used to think were the thing, and I was wearing these. And we another chap and I were going around, and we were being peppered with these nasty little grenade things that the Japanese have, which were presumably overthrows for this thing. And so we got into a split trench, and we bent down, and mosquitoes were biting me in the bottom where my pajamas were very, really tight. But the Japanese took this thing that night, and the engineers all got out. We tried to recapture it with a brigade, with the brigade headquarters platoon, you know, defense platoon, the next day, and they were driven off. And then in the end, another company came up from some other regiment, and they got them out, with covering fire provided by the brigade, who lay there with rifles and sort of blasted away almost in time at the Japanese. So that night it was very, very close. I know there was two of these engineers I think they just made it to brigade headquarters lines and had been hit then by one of these little grenades. And one chap was a big, heavy, heavy fellow, and he'd fallen in the slip trench. And we couldn't see him very much from this other ship, and I went to lift him out, and I said, "My God, isn't he heavy?" And a sepulchral voice came up almost from the bowels of the earth, said, "Yes, 15 stone." So he lugged him out and took him into the field ambulance, which was quite only a short distance away, because we were in the middle of headquarters. And then I went back. I don't know what the other chap. I went back to this area to try and find this other engineer. And he was, I found him. He was a little chap, entirely different. And he was saying, "No, they've finished me. I've had it." And I was trying to cheer him up and say, "No, you're all right, come on." And I was able to pick him up, being fairly strong. And I carried him into the field ambulance. But he had had it. He died the next day. And listen, I think it was a piece of the mortar must have penetrated inside him somewhere. He didn't appear to be hurt. The big chap who lost a leg, the 15 stone chap, he appeared to be much worse than this little chap, but wasn't to be. So that was the roughest bit of time, really. And the headquarters weren't really equipped to jungle fighting, but they stuck it out, and they were very good.
Did you think that the Japanese would break through it in file?
No, I don't think. I mean, they did break through to Kohima. They cut Imphal off, and that's where the attack was going in. It became clear that would be there. We knew that we'd been told, as I said earlier on, that they got tried to get behind you, and you had to sit firm and keep still. And this was happening, on a very big scale. I don't think we ever. I remember I think it was the 5th Indian Division that was brought up from the Arakan, and they were flown in and taken straight up and far. For some reason, I saw them coming into the airstrip when I was there. I must have been, for some reason, I was there. And I think we stayed put, And it became obvious about the time I'm talking that Japanese weren't getting all things all their own way. In Japanese, various stories came around about Japanese prisoners giving himself up, because this was exceptional. I mean, they fought very bravely. Last man, last round was meant something to them. But he'd given himself up because he got so tired of carrying the rear legs of a machine gun through the Burma jungle. You know, it was just absolutely fed up with this. So he gave up the war. But on the other hand, they were fighting bravely. They got assault upstairs now, which there were an attack not on us but on another unit just down the road. And during the night, it was nothing very serious. But in the morning, they went out and they found a Japanese officer and about 8 men, I think it was, and so many rifles, and the sword, and his notebook, and they translated all this, and they found that it was one man had got away from this little unit, which was the last. The record was one officer, say 8 men, one sword, one machine gun, light machine gun, so many rifles, and we counted it all up. There was one officer, so many men except one, and this thing, and this sword. So it, this was just before I was leaving, just when they were really cracking. And the Brigadier James gave this sword to me, because I'd got the one in the motorcycle, which I'd given him. I'd given him earlier.
As far as gathering intelligence was concerned, was it particularly difficult since they wouldn't surrender?
Oh, I think it was.
So you had to rely on things like captured documents?
Yes. Yes, and I tell you, this—they did document themselves very well. And this map of this motorcycle combination, goodness knows what that was doing there. Really, when you sort of look back, you think, why on earth did they do that? But that had maps on it, which at least showed where that unit was going. But.
You were saying how bravely they fought, but what was the general attitude in the British Imperial forces at Kohima Imphal towards the Japanese enemy? Did you hate them or respect them or what?
Well, I think generally speaking, one respected their bravery. At the same time, you heard stories of how they treated prisoners of war and cut off their heads and one thing and another. And you obviously thought they were behaving in an uncivilized manner, so to speak. You can be brave and uncivilized. I mean, I suppose Attila the Hun was the same sort of attitude. You could recognize that they'd fight to the death, but. That trait of their character, I didn't like at all.
Did you ever see any Japanese prisoners?
The one I saw from Molokin, and he was very badly wounded. He was brought back. I don't know what happened to him. He was just sent back.
Did he speak at all?
No.
How did the Indian troops perform against the Japanese, from your personal observation?